This is a Defocus Media production.
You only get one chance at a first impression. And for new contact lens wearers, that can be the difference between success or dropping out of lens wear altogether. Today's world is fast-paced and highly digital. In fact, young, new contact lens wearers average over 9 hours per day in front of screens. And during those hours, they are blinking 60% less often, which leads to more dryness and more eye fatigue. The Acuvue Oasys one-day contact lens design meets today's digital demands. In a recent clinical trial of daily disposable contact lens wearers who use digital devices 8 or more hours a day, Acuvue Oasys one-day was superior in comfort and reducing the symptoms of dryness versus other daily disposable contact lenses. When you make that initial lens selection for your patient, prescribe a lens that will set your patient up for success. We only get one chance to wow our patients by having them love their contact lenses from the very first fit. You can learn more about the Acuvue Oasys one-day family of products at Acuvue.com.
This is Lunch Date with Rachel and Kate, a Defocus Media production. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Kate. I felt very editorial there.
That was very good. Do it again.
Thank you. I'm Kate. Like, I could be a newswoman anchor, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
An anchor woman.
This is 2020. And I'm Kate.
Yes! Yes! Yeah. Yes! I'm in the wrong career. I'm in the wrong career. Well, I feel like I've had I need multiple careers if I'm going to do this again. Like, detective. We've already discussed that we should be detectives.
Like, forensic evidence, send it our way. If there's a mystery to be solved, send it to Lunch Date with Rachel and Kate.
You just want to know who your boyfriend's mom's sister's cousin is? Deal.
Yeah.
Tell us what you want to know. We'll figure it out. So, Rachel, I told you that I was saving this story for the pod
because yes, and I have been waiting.
So good. It's so good. So today, I go to a workout because I'm getting swole, lifting heavy things off of floors and all the things. So do that. Then I was like, I'm going to go to Sam's Club because Evan wanted some new workout shirts. And Sam's Club usually has Under Armour or something. And I like a pretty decent deal. Mm. Sweet. Love it. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. So I go to Sam's Club, and while I'm there, I buy lots of things, which include toilet bowl cleaner.
Okay.
So I buy 2 boxes of 4 toilet bowl cleaner. And because one, I'm going to donate to, we have a local homeless shelter that is a transitional housing kind of place.
That's really nice. For some donations.
So yeah, I was like, okay, I'm going to get one for them and then one for us. Got a couple other things for them. I carried everything I took out. I went through all my stuff, took it all out to my car, was unloading. And I put one box of Lysol, Clorox, I don't know, one of the toilet bowl cleaner into the car. The other, and then I pull out the other one. Then I felt something wet on my pants. And this was my first thought. I think I drooled on myself. That was my first thought. Which I did not. Let me clarify here. I did not.
Okay.
But I was nervous that was what it was. And I was like, shoot, I'm a goner. Like, I don't know what's going on with my life. I just drooled on myself. Then I noticed some blue toilet bowl cleaner liquid on top of the one that I saw. The other box, as well as on the kind of like on the way into the car. And I was like, no. So I pull it out, realize it's leaking out of a corner. Mm. I just bought this, dude. Checked the other one. The other one's fine. I was like, okay. So I pick this one up and I'd be like checking it out and kind of turn it over a little bit just to kind of see, is it like, okay, there's just some liquid somewhere, whatever. I could see it's dribbling out. It's like kind of steady flow now out of a corner. I was like, okay, I'm going to take this inside. I think I can tilt it in a way, like have it in a way that it's not going to leak a bunch because I kind of had it like tilted enough so that it doesn't leak everywhere. I'm going to do that and I'm going to take it back in and I'm just going to exchange it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I would just take it home and I'd deal with it later, but I was kind of standing up for myself. Kind of felt nice. As I'm walking into Sam's Club, this thing pretty much explodes all over me.
Oh no.
It's like, I don't know how it's doing this, but every corner of the box has blue liquid coming out of it. It's dripping all over the place. I walk into the store, like trying to like catch this liquid. It's all over me. And I found a trash can and just kind of like tilted it sideways so all the liquid's going to the trash can.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just bought this and it exploded as I took it out of my cart. I don't know what's going on. And the lady was like, oh, just keep it here and just tell them. And then, I'll just, just tell them and I'll nod at them and I'll let them know, like, it's bad. Like, okay, sweet. So I go up to the return counter, which, you know, is just like right inside the store. Mm-hmm. And the lady's like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. And she takes a trash bag, goes over, takes the thing. She needs a barcode and just puts it in a trash bag, which.
Okay.
Very smart.
Yeah.
So I get a new one and everything, but I have toilet bowl cleaner all over my hands, over my like workout pants and on my legs and stuff. And so I was like, can I get a paper towel? And she's like, yeah, sure. Here you go. And she gave me like paper towels so I could kind of like wipe up all this nasty goo all over me. But then the front of my leg started burning.
Oh no.
So I think I got a very mild chemical burn from this toilet because it wasn't bad, and so I wasn't gonna stick toilet paper down my pants at this point in time.
Okay.
Not paper towel, whatever it is, down my pants to try to soak up on the inside. I like kind of just like patted on the top and was like, okay, let's get off most of this. I just have this like little chemical burn, just slight.
Is it
slight.
Red or white?
Yeah, it's like red, so that's good. It's not bad, but the skin definitely feels like you took off some top layer here. Like,
oh, this is, no. You got toilet bowled.
Yeah. So realize today two things. One, toilet bowl cleaner is not to be messed with.
Like, no.
It's a strong substance. Two, I guess there's no two. I think that's just the one. But two, just like, man, what a day.
I wonder what happened.
I have no idea. I feel somebody like
somebody put a Mentos in there.
Probably. That's what it feels like, because it felt like it broke, but I was like, there should be this much liquid coming out of all of the holes in this. So
what's today, on the menu today?
The menu today is, you're going to make fun. This is kind of funny, but it's what's real. It is a meal prep, like chicken dinner.
Cool.
Why it is a meal prep chicken dinner is because it comes with all of the ingredients. It tells you how to do everything. All you got to do is just put it together.
Just follow the instructions.
And you put in the things that are given to you, and you just put it together. And then you have a glorious meal.
So what does this meal mean to us?
Well, I want to give people the empowerment to be able to do their own. I feel like both of us do, like, the empowerment to do their own study. Like,
yes.
To be able to feel like they can investigate portions of the wage gap that is important to them. Like, we're only two people, and like, we have a group of what, 6 to 8? Like, it wasn't like we had a huge group of people. And so like, it's time for everyone to, you know, like, it's not time for everyone, I guess it kind of time, but like the opportunity for others to be able to do research and like figure out how to do this and get published. We want to give you the access to our brains. So you have the instructions. You can find the ingredients that you want. Then all you have to do is put it together.
Totally. Yes. I think this is a great idea because, like, we're really interested in the wage gap. But, you know, it's also just important for, like, new graduates to know what are optometrists paid. And nobody tells you that in optometry school except for you and I. So it's time for that research to continue. And our data is from 2018, so it's time for a new round of research. And anybody could do it.
Yeah, really anybody can. I think it can be super intimidating, especially if you want to kind of do things more on the social science side. Some, like, ours is a little bit more social science-y.
Yeah. We're here for. So let's take them step by step through what we did.
Yeah. So I think the first step that we did is we figured out what we wanted to study as a part of the wage gap. Really what we wanted to see was just kind of down to the nitty gritties of what are doctors paid? Did they negotiate? Like, those were our kind of two biggest factors, like, that we wanted to know.
We wanted to control for a bunch of things that weren't controlled for in the existing studies.
Yep.
As of right now, not to toot our own horns, but ours is the only peer-reviewed study into the wage gap in optometry. So it's time for another one. So we came up with our hypothesis that was, even if we control for everything.
Is there still a wage gap? Is there still an unexplained wage gap here?
For new graduates. Yeah. For new graduates, first job out of school, there shouldn't be a wage gap if you're looking at, like, people in the same region and people in the same practice type. There really shouldn't, but is there one? That's what we wanted to find out. And we did find out that there was one. It was like 6%.
Yeah.
Okay, so first we developed a hypothesis.
Mm-hmm. Then I think the thing that we did next is we found the people. We found people. I want to kind of break. I know that seems ridiculous, but we wanted to find somebody that was going to be a good research mentor, so that way we could feel really confident in what we were doing. So that's when we connected with our dear friend Dr. Bassey. And he kind of helped us with a lot there. So we connected with the right people to be able to help us succeed in this. Mm-hmm. Let's say you don't have someone that you feel like you have the right people to help you with, like, feel free to reach out to us in that.
Absolutely. You know, things. It's really good if you're a student, if you're at an optometry school, because there's an institutional review board. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Institutional review board?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you have to get approval from an IRB and get, like, some numbers associated with it. And basically, you just mm-hmm. have to fill out a certain amount of forms. But when you want to get something peer-reviewed, they want to know those numbers.
Yep. And so with the why you need to have an international review board, I think it's an
institutional.
You know what? I'm going to
– It's an IRB.
Yeah, it's called IRB. And so –
They hold you to a certain amount of standards, to certain standards.
Institutional review board. Oh, my gosh, you're so good at this. So, yeah, because what they want to make sure is that you're not going to go in there and all of a sudden just, like, psychologically or physically anything, like, mess up people because you have human subjects. So it's like
– Exactly.
Yeah, so they just want to make sure that you're just not going to mess somebody up, or you're also – as well as that the data collection that you're doing is not only ethical but is – sustainable, like somebody else can repeat your study, you know, if you've got a couple of these things. So it's a lot of, because you want your study to be repeatable. So a lot of they just kind of review what you're doing to make sure you're not going to harm anybody, make sure that your study is an ethical, good study.
And they want to see, like, if you're going to be incentivizing the people to participate in the study, are you doing it in a way that's not like bribery? They are trying to, like, just keep you on the up and up. So you have to, like, what is it, like, jump over that hurdle before you get going. So I'd say number two. Okay, number one, hypothesis. Number two, connect with people who know what they're doing. Number mm-hmm. three, institutional review board.
Yep. And honestly, the IRB is – it can seem like the hardest part because it's, like, the biggest thing that you kind of have to do to start your research, but it's really not that – it's not that difficult. I don't want that to be
I just filled out a couple forms.
Yeah. I don't want that to be something that scares you. I will – having those people too will be super helpful because they only meet so – you know, at a certain time of the month to go over all the studies. And so you can't – so, like, if you want to if you want to start something at a certain time, you have to have, like, approval ahead of time. And sometimes they can only go through so many in a month. So you're going to want to make sure that you have that in advance, you know, well in advance. So so it's really helpful if you do have a person that knows a lot more that they can help you through that. So once you get your IRB, you did it. Congrats. Now you can start your study.
Yeah. So when you're submitting to the IRB, you may have had to say how you're going to do the study. So you probably mm-hmm. already have this in mind. For us, we wanted to do a survey. Mm-hmm. So we had to write the survey and submit it to the IRB. And the IRB gives you, like, a paper back that has to go at the front of anything you send out. So, like, mm-hmm. it's like a consent form, I think.
Yep. And so, because that way people know that they're a part of a study and we're just not, like, pulling data from random people and they don't know that they're a part of it. So once we fit – not only did we have our study built really beforehand with the IRB, but we made sure that we had places that we wanted to send it and people we wanted to send it to, places we wanted to post it. So I think Rachel and I, we found so many Facebook groups.
Yeah.
We found email lists. Mm-hmm. We found any way possible that we could get this in front of optometrists. I feel like we found a way to do it. And that was how we sent out our study. So it wasn't like it was this big fancy email that we, like, pulled. I mean, we did have a well-worded email, but it wasn't like we bought a listserv and then we did this and we did this. Like, we really just grass-rooted this study.
It was like using connections and stuff because you were what's that called?
So I was the AOSA trustee at the time.
I was going to say ambassador.
Yeah. Well, close. Still similar.
You were the ambassador. So you were able to get it out to a lot of different schools.
Yeah, so I was able to get it to a lot of schools, and then we worked with – we sent it to executive directors of associations to send it to their doctors. Not everybody did, but we, you know, we tried our best. We really connected with as many people – like to as many places as possible so that we could send it out to so we could really get it out to all – like all corners of the United States.
Yeah, we contacted the moderators of Facebook groups a lot and had them send it to their members so that it didn't look like it was just coming from like
a couple randos.
Us. But we sent them the script that we used to like get people to do it. And as an incentive, we did like a drawing. Like if you did the survey, you were entered to win something in a drawing.
Yeah, so we had like several different items. I think we had like Bose headphones. I don't think they were Bose. And like a
we had some kind of headphones.
Google
and
Home.
And we had an Alexa Dot.
I think it was an Alexa Dot. I think you're right. I knew it was like some sort of home thing because they were like new.
I mean, none of it was expensive.
Mm-mm. No, and I think people wanted to participate in it. And then I think people like were also like, well, what the heck? Like this would be nice if I won. Like you know, like it's just like a cherry on top. So that was cool. So that's how we got our survey out to people. Really, it wasn't anything that was, you know, I think of like, oh, do you buy a spread in Vision Monday or 2020 or something like, no, it really was just us, just truly a grassroots campaign. So you don't have to have anything fancy to do a study. Like you don't have to, I was so nervous, I think, going into it and what was like, how are we going to make this super fancy and things? Cause I, you know, seeing all of the like big research stuff that we've done that people do and that wasn't, we didn't have to do that.
No. And if you wanted to recreate our exact study, every question that we asked in the survey is in the appendix of our research paper in optometry and vision science. It's called Optometry Compensation Study, Narrowing Down the Unexplained Gender Wage Gap in Optometry.
Yep. And so honestly, and I think it would be great too, because of, if you want to just redo the whole thing, because one, time has changed. Two, it only makes things more credible or gives us more information when somebody else does it, because they're going to, you're going to have different groups and different people that you'll connect with. And so, that's really awesome. And, you know, I think you know, it also gives us kind of like a timeline of where we've been and what's going on and everything there. We also, you know, we had a lot of doctors of where they were and they probably changed jobs and negotiated for raises and also the work that we've done to try to get students to negotiate and also just understand where their pay should be, and have pay transparency. Like, how does that, like, has that done anything? Like, that'd be good to know. So,
I'm also particularly interested in, when we looked at it, the new graduate cohort was 2015 to 2018. I'd be interested to see what the wage gap is among 2015 to 2018 graduates now that they've been out a little while.
Yeah.
Like it was 6% then. Is it bigger now?
Yeah. Is it bigger? Is it smaller? Is it the same? Like where are we?
Yeah.
I think it would be super cool to see what that feels like and what that looks like. We worked on our survey. We sent it out. Then we had a date when we were done collecting. Obviously, it wasn't like we did this. Yeah. So we did it for what, 2-3 months? I think it was 3 months.
Yeah, I think so.
And so we received all that data. It was 3 months. I think also, did we do SurveyMonkey or did we do Google Forms for
Google Forms.
Yeah. So again, we didn't pay anything to do this and it all got fed into a spreadsheet. If you do use that to work through something, make sure you do cite it. Like write things down that you're doing, write things down. Like, I guess one thing that I would advise throughout this whole process is like write things down. Because they're going to ask you questions of like, well, why did you do this? And you can be like, it was a Tuesday and that seems like a good idea. Or you could have like those thoughts that you were having of like, we worded this question this way because it's going to get us to this answer quicker.
Yeah.
Like write things down. Cause that'll help when it comes time, cause time will pass and you'll forget, things there.
Yeah. So we finished the survey. We had so much data, so much data. Bassie called it a gold mine of data. We had so much information. And we just decided, like, he was like, just pick a couple things. What I said was like, can you run everything and just tell me what's significant? And he was like, I could, but you don't want that. That's not good. That's not good science. Mm-hmm. So he was like, just pick the things you really want to know and I'll run the data on, I'll run the numbers on that. And it took him a while to get back to us. So while we were waiting for him to get back to us, what we were doing was we figured out where we wanted it to be published and we looked up mm-hmm. their requirements. And then mm-hmm. we started trying to meet those requirements because, like, when you publish a paper, you have to write a paper. Like, you can't just mm-hmm. you can't just show your data. You got to have, like, 20 sources or something.
Yeah, it's insane.
So we got busy reading journal articles.
So that's when we kind of started doing those things. And then when Dr. Bassi got back to us.
We decided to do a poster first before we published.
So when our poster was published, we actually started, we wanted some feedback. So we had a couple groups post it for us mm-hmm. and we kind of sent it that way. Yeah. We sent it out to people to get some feedback on our survey and kind of where people were. We got a lot of interesting feedback. Lots good.
And you can get a lot of mileage out of a publication. Like you get published or you present a poster, you can pitch that idea to like Review of Optometry, the AOA, Women in Optometry, whatever. Just write the editor an email and be like, are you interested in this? Because they're always looking for stories. Yeah. Like how many stories can you do on dry eye?
Yeah, you want a variety of content. Like people are always looking. I can tell you this is like when with my job, like knowing what people look like or who are working with content, they're always looking for something. Always. Mm-hmm. Once you do anything, you can send it out to people. We kind of created our own little press release for it and sent it out to people, with the poster attached too. So that was really great. Then Rachel got busy writing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like they spell it out really clearly what they want. Mm-hmm. And so then I just tried to do what they wanted.
Yeah.
And it turned out that the statistics that we got from all the numbers that Dr. Bassi was crunching, they don't want it like that. Mm-mm. They want it like simple. They wanted like the averages. And I don't even know if they wanted standard deviation. I can't even remember. They wanted something that like was so much. I could have done it in Google. Mm-hmm. So it would have been helpful to read that way earlier, but
I think it did. The one thing that the statistics did help us with is like, let's say we want to go into further journals. We want to go into further things. Like we do have mm-hmm. the statistics base to do it already. And it doesn't feel like the data is the data is not fully really out of date at this point in time. And so, I think that was an interesting spot of where we are in life.
So like the paper got all the way written. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go through a paper, it's like you got your abstract, you got your introduction, you got your, methods, results, conclusions, and methods, results, discussions, conclusions, and then references. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote mm-hmm. a lot.
Yeah.
And then everybody proofread it, mm-hmm. everybody on the team proofread it, and then I sent mm-hmm. it, and then they wrote back and were like, they were like, make a million changes.
Yeah.
And Dr. Bassi said, he sent an email and he was like, so that's a lot of changes, but I think that they must want to publish this because they could have rejected this uh-huh. based on the amount of changes that they want. Like they could have easily said, this is a rejection, but they like the topic. Uh-huh. They like the premise. So Bassi was like, you just go bird by bird and you change, you just correct every single thing, just correct everything. So we did that.
We did.
And we did. And we sent it again. And I think you get two tries or something like that.
Yeah.
So we sent it back and they had a couple lingering things that were like, well, what about this? And what about that? And by that time, like I've got this paper memorized. Mm-hmm. Like it depends on how you take criticism. Mm-hmm. Like the first round, I was like, these are kind of snarky, some of these comments, but like they're rolling off my back. By the second round, I was like, I will kill you.
You're coming after my firstborn child. Like, who do you think you are?
Yeah. Yeah, really. I was like, no, I meant it that way. I said it and I meant it. Anyway, so eventually they approved it.
Yeah. And I think that especially with something like this, like there wasn't like a clear standard of like what was done before. And like, and so I mm-hmm. think that's where it wasn't a traditional paper to be published in optometry vision science. Yeah. Like, I feel like we were all kind of in new waters. Like, they liked it and they're like, this feels relevant. Mm-hmm. But like,
yeah,
at the same time, I have no idea exactly what I'm doing. You know, like, and we're like, we're not 100% sure.
Yeah. Our timing was fortunate too.
Yeah. Our timing was
because they
really
were looking
great
to be like, to diversify like their editorial board. So this mm-hmm. was like a good topic for them.
Yeah, it really was. And I think so that was really cool. And then it was published. So Rachel was the primary author since she wrote it. So she got the primary author. So she's, so when you search things, you see like, it's like Simpson. And then if we wanted to, it could be like et al. So it's like everybody else, you know, like it's so like.
When but everybody's in there.
Yeah, everybody's in there. But like Rachel's the first one. She's so cool. and so then.
Oh, this was interesting. Mm-hmm. So when you're assigning the order of authors, it makes you like tell what everybody's contribution was. Mm-hmm. Like you have to like write out what everybody did.
Yeah. Because people will try to jump on papers and stuff just to get like their name on stuff when really it's like, they didn't do squat.
You didn't proofread anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, okay, this was cool. Before, okay, two more things.
Go for it.
Before it got published, they sent it to like the people who put together the magazine. Yeah, it was really neat. And they like changed every spot where it said gender to sex. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Every single time in the paper. And I had to make them change it back.
Yeah, because like that's not how we mean. Yeah, and that's not how we worded it. So we can't necessarily use that. Like we based it off of gender. However, anybody identified with their gender, that's how we
exactly.
Not that.
And then the other thing was, if you wanted to have everybody have access to the paper without mm-hmm. signing in, you had to pay like thousands of dollars.
Yeah. So that was the thing. I think that's, I've had a lot of people like mention this is like, especially now when people are like, do your research. And people are like, I Googled it. It's like, that's not how you do research. Like you have to go in and you have to get articles and you got to do this and you got to do that. Is like, it costs to either subscribe to these journals or, and it's hard to find access to them unless you're a mm-hmm. student or you work at a school or something. Like, it's not an easy thing where all of a sudden you're just like, doop, here we go. Like, got all my stuff. Yeah. Like, it's hard. And so, asked Dr. Bassey and he pushed for us to be able to get funding so that people could just read this without signing in or anything. We thought the research was like, that important. So,
UMSL really had our back.
Yeah, really they did. And I think that was really cool. Cause we were new grads. We were a year out mm-hmm. when this was all published. Like we started as students and then we were new grads when this was out, when it was published. And I feel like they were super proud of us.
Yeah, it was good. So now it could be good for you.
Especially students, like totally use your time at school, like take advantage. Cause otherwise you have to pay for all of those journals and all of those articles.
Yeah.
So use your time while you're in school and you can do this really cool, you know, you could do something big. And if you don't want to publish a paper and you just want to do a poster, great. That's fantastic too.
You definitely do a poster.
Yeah. And I think it's a great practice round too, because you get to work out like your abstract and your discussion and your conclusion. Like you get to figure that out for the first time before it's with a paper.
Yeah. You can get – a poster can get you so much attention. Like you just got to play your cards right. And it's not nearly as hard as getting peer reviewed. Like the research itself was just like fun and exciting. The peer review part was the hard part.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. We enjoyed collecting the data. We enjoyed looking at the data and that was fun. And synthesizing it, like we could synthesize it and kind of be like, okay, this is what it means and everything. But like writing it in a way that other people could read our brains was difficult. Yeah. So,
but don't let us scare you off because maybe you'll think it's super fun. It was super fun.
It was. I think it was, it's one of the coolest experiences that I've gone through. I feel like,
I feel
like that was a really cool experience, that we got to go through together.
Yes. You were so game for everything. I really appreciated
Always game for everything. Like it's pretty hard for me not to be game for something. Like, I really have to not want to do it. and I really wanted to do this. I just find it fascinating. And I think research is a place where people can sometimes feel like they're not, it's not as an inclusive of a space, especially for people that have ideas that might not be the ones that match the status quo right now, but you can do this.
Yeah. I'm sure there's something that like no one has thought of.
Yeah.
That's important to you should be important to the rest of us.
Yeah. Your contribution will make a big difference to other people. So I think it's super cool. But yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got too. I would love if somebody redid our research.
Yeah.
So that we didn't have to.
Yeah.
Because I would like a nap.
Yeah, Rachel does need a nap. I took a nap today already, though, so I don't necessarily need a nap, but I really don't have a ton of time. And also, you can start, let's say you want to talk about a topic first, is like before our, we wanted to build credibility for ourselves too before we published. You do not have to, but if that's something you want to do, like reach out to Eyes on Eye Care, reach out to Review of Optometry, like
Defocus.
Yeah, Defocus too. Like people are looking for content because it is overwhelming to constantly come up with content and information. And so we started building our credibility on wage gap and negotiation during this process too. So by the time it came out, like Rachel, I feel like you and I are some of the like most known experts on like the wage gap in optometry. Like, I mean, I feel like we're some of the, we're the only ones with published papers. So I feel like we're the experts.
That's true.
So, you know, but like we're the ones that have put in the time and the effort to learn more and to work on this. And so I feel like we're the people.
I would love to be the people. I hope we're the people.
I feel like we're the people. I feel like we're the people. We the people.
We.
We the people.
Yes.
Throughout this summer and like a couple different spaces is like we've had a lot of really cool opportunities to talk about the wage gap and negotiation and all those things as of late. Like I got to talk to NECO for a while and there's a lot of really cool things there. Rachel and I have some stuff, gigs because we're cool artists lined up throughout the summer. So if that's something that you want to talk about and you want to like have us speak to, like we'd love to with whatever group you have. We talked at UMSL. We spoke to UMSL about all of this, which was awesome. Kind of cool to go back to the place where this all started and get to present. So if you have where you want us to speak or you want to just talk with us more on how to do research, like feel free to reach out anytime. We'll build, we know that content, so we'll do it for you.
Well, sweet. I mean, takeaways and action items, like I feel doing like research.
Yeah, do research. Like that's where I was like trying to think of my takeaways and action items. And I was like, well, I did my action items already.
No research. No, it's over.
I'm tired. Took away?
What?
You know what I took away from that all? The unexplained wage gap is real. That's our one sentence review of our research.
It's real. It's real.
Until next time. Bye.
Bye.